Welcome to the Strangers and Aliens podcast.
Strangers. To boldly say what needs to be said.
Would you be a stranger or an alien? Or would you be a strange alien?
The truth is out there. I am your father's best friend, Plumber. Superman.
Wonder Woman.
Heroes. Villains. Captain Picard versus Captain Kirk.
Do you think that there's room in sci-fi for God? The very first thing that God did,
so wise you are,
was that he created something, so we have a creative God.
This is Strangers and Aliens Podcast.
Hello and welcome back to the Strangers and Aliens Podcast. This is our first episode of 2012. I'm Ben, one of the three sci-fi guys, and with me, as always, well, I shouldn't say as always, because we had two episodes, one each, where you were missing Dr. Jace and Steve.
Yeah, there were mini-sodes, right?
Yeah. Steve, we should do one without Ben, just to make it fair.
Yeah. So he sees what it feels like to be left out.
Exactly.
Denied entrance.
To be fair, you were invited. Both of you.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like it wasn't.
I mean, whatever, Ben.
I'm not doing a power play.
Yeah.
Rats, all right, back to the Ben show.
They found me out.
Wait. This is the time when Ben goes, I would never do that. It's kind of like a story in one of my books.
Yeah.
Where.
I actually have a screenplay written up about that.
Oh. Okay. So today we are talking about anything but one of my books. We are talking about Star Wars because of Dr. Jace, actually. We had talked about maybe, hey, let's do Star Wars as a topic, and then Dr. Jace posts a list of his favorite Star Wars movies from most favorite to least favorite, and numbering the six full-length live-action Star Wars theatrical releases. And his list got us quite a bit of, I don't know if controversy is quite the right word, but it gave us some good comments.
Someone threatened to light my car on fire, so that's kind of, you know.
Yeah, but that's not controversial.
Yeah, and it was my brother, so it probably doesn't count anyways.
But we decided, well, let's go ahead and just, you know, jump on the Star Wars topic, and because Steve and I both do not agree with Dr. Jace's list.
At all.
That's okay.
Insane. Like standing in front of a landing plane.
You guys are both wrong about so many things, so it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, but in this case, we're not going to, like, just list out, you know, here's the movies, here's Dr. Jace's list, here's my list, and here's Steve's list. We are going to refer to all three of our, you know, lists, quote unquote. If you do want to see Dr. Jace's list, it's on our blog at strangersandaliens.com, and you can see his list and how just incredibly, when you see it laid out in numerical order,
how incredibly insightful it is.
How insightfully insane
this
list is. So, but what we're going to do is we're actually going to take a little different methodical approach. Instead of listing it in our own order, we're going to take it in the order they were given to us, story-wise, starting at episode 1, ending in episode 6, and we're going to just kind of discuss the pros and cons of each.
Hitchhiking.
Yeah. So, but to start with, guys, let's talk about, you know, Star Wars is a part of a lot of little boys' lives, and we are not little boys anymore. But
and little girls.
That's true, but we're all boys, so I guess that's why. My daughters love Star Wars. That's true. And my sister, she tolerated Star Wars. My wife can't stand Star Wars, which is bad because my son, you know, he runs around with his lightsaber. And my wife just grits her teeth and bears it, you know, because she knows it's a 10-year-old boy.
Yeah. Is that what she does when you're doing this podcast? She stands over your shoulder gritting her teeth?
And bearing it, yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
What? Hey, but before we go any further, I think we should just put a caveat out at the front of this episode saying that we are not concerned with spoilers. If anyone hasn't seen these movies, go and watch them before you listen to this podcast, because we can't just catch ourselves every single time we're going to get to a plot point, which is going to, you know, blow the entire series for you. So if you haven't seen them, go watch them before you listen to us. Because
if you haven't seen them, I mean, in some cases you've had, what, 30-some years?
If they haven't seen them now, they probably will never see them.
Yeah. So this is your opportunity to get the gist of it without seeing it then.
Yes.
But, if you want to do that.
But yeah, definitely we'll be talking about major plot points and resolution to character arcs and that sort of thing. I've probably been surrounded by Star Wars almost my entire life. I remember when I was 3 or 4, my grandmother gave me a Darth Vader and a Chewbacca action figure.
Nice.
I hadn't seen the movie yet, but at least I don't remember seeing the movie yet, because my cousin explained to me that Chewbacca didn't talk, because I was making them talk to each other. And my cousin said, they don't talk. Chewbacca doesn't talk. He just growls. And then I do remember seeing the first Star Wars in the theater, but I believe it was a year after it had been released in the States. I was up in Canada. And I also remember watching the holiday special.
Was it in TV. Canadian? Saw it in the theater?
Yeah, they had Canadian subtitles. So my dad
translated into Canadian.
So, Ben, you actually remember seeing the Christmas special?
I do, man.
Yeah, I was there too. I do.
Most people don't even know that there is a Star Wars Christmas special, and everyone has to see it. It is so ridiculously cheesy.
Oh, my goodness. But here's the thing. As a 4-year-old, it excited me because, first of all, you got to see more Wookiees. You got to see Chewbacca's family. Stormtroopers came, and there was some shooting. Not a lot, but there was some. There was that cartoon with Boba Fett.
You got to try to pronounce the word Kashyyyk because it has 3 Ys in a row.
I've never even tried. In fact, my son corrected me yesterday. When we were driving and we were going to go buy something at Target with his Christmas money, and we were talking, and I brought up the holiday special because we were talking about Boba Fett and the cartoons and stuff like that, and I tried saying it, and he corrected me. He said, Dad, I'm like, how do you even know that? He hasn't seen Revenge of the Sith at all. He hasn't seen any of the Clone Wars episodes, but he has it in a book, and he's heard his friends say, I guess, I don't know. But
well, I had an even worse experience with my son. He's 10, and a couple years ago I was, all the movies are out, hey, we can sit down and we can watch the Star Wars films. And I said, now when we watch the films, okay, there are certain things in the films where, you know, you might have heard something here or there or whatever, and I want to make sure that, because the way that the stories are told, and I'm big into story theory and stuff like that, and I'm like, the way the stories are told, sometimes things will come out later in this. And he's like how Darth Vader is Luke's dad. And I'm like, what? How do you know that? You haven't even seen. It's like, oh, when we play on the playground, everyone's like, oh, you be Anakin and you be Luke, and you, because Anakin is Luke's dad. And I'm like, what? How can someone do that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a sad thing.
And it's just completely blown.
See, that was my plight. So when I was a kid, when I hadn't seen Star Wars, when I went into the movies, I already knew that because someone had told me, because the movies had been out for a long time.
Right.
So I went into it knowing that that Darth Vader was Luke's dad. However, the surprise for me was when we found out that Leia was his sister. That was a surprise for me. So that was the biggest surprise in the trilogy for me, because I didn't know about it going in. But Star Wars, I mean, obviously, most people, their on-ramp to sci-fi in childhood is either Star Wars or Star Trek. Usually. Yeah,
it is.
That is their on-ramp to science fiction, and you usually either love it or you hate it. There aren't too many people that are in the middle.
Right.
And we obviously are not in the middle here.
Well,
this is we're very biased toward the actual franchise of Star Wars, but there's some other biases that we're going to get into in a moment here. So
yeah, wait a minute. I think I heard some creaking. Oh yeah, old man bias is what I'm hearing.
No, I think that I can defend it beyond just in my day, Star Wars had no Jar Jar Binks. You know, I mean, we can.
We'll get there.
Especially
we'll
since that's not exactly true. My Star Wars that I grew up with did have what was essentially some Jar Jar Binks moments. But
yes, we'll get to those.
Speaking of Jar Jar, let's begin.
First episode.
With episode one. Now, Jace, on your list of favorites, where did episode one rank for you?
It was number five.
Yeah, see, and for most people, I think episode one drops all the way to the bottom, but you put something else at the bottom of your list. That
I did.
I can't believe you did, but we'll get to that one in about five movies. But
give it away. Yeah. Give it away.
I also would not put episode one at the bottom of my list. I would tie it, you know, well, I guess that would be at the bottom list, but it's tied for fifth. It's tied for last place. But the only reason it's tied for last place is because Phantom Menace is what it is and makes that other movie become what it becomes. And so you have Phantom Menace that is, in a nutshell, here's the plot line. A little boy invents...
A little boy builds a robot.
Then he wins a race, and then he accidentally wins a battle for a war that's happening, or for a blockade that's happening on this planet, right? So this little boy accidentally goes through this whole thing and wins a battle. In the meantime, you have an alien creature who stumbles through the movie and accidentally helps win that battle, or maybe helps lose it, depending on how you might look at it, because they weren't doing too well before the little boy accidentally blows up the ship.
Hold on.
In the meantime, you do have...
Creaking. I hear it.
You do have Obi-Wan Kenobi and another good Jedi with Qui-Gon, and they are, you know, trying to uncover some different things going on, and they end up in a big battle with a Sith Lord, and it's a cool battle with awesome, you know, choreography and everything like that. Unfortunately, it does feel sometimes a little too choreographed. It doesn't feel totally natural, but it looks very, very good.
And they finally defeat the red herring. I mean, the red faced villain.
They defeat him by killing him.
I can see this. I can see the tag team happening now. The two,
they actually kill
the
him.
The two senior citizens. Back in my day.
Well, you know what? Hey, here's where I'm coming from, okay? And I will defend this a little bit later. But this movie ranks number three on my list.
What?
Three. Wow. Okay? What? And I will defend it. Okay?
Go for it.
But go ahead.
Let's hear it. Go ahead. Defend this thing.
Finish the synopsis first.
No, that is the synopsis.
That was it?
Yeah. I mean, it's basically the same movie as...
Steve, the reason why you missed it is because it sounded like this. Wah, 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 wah.
The problem with this movie, and Jace, you have some problems with some of the later movies like this too. You have the first Star Wars movie that came out, and this is the same similar plot where you have them blow up a Death Star and they have to, you know, win the day by blowing up the Death Star. In this case, it's a control ship that controls every single droid in the droid army. You blow up this one ship and you've... They have no independent programming. They just shut down. But
that's not uncommon in sci-fi lore. I mean, you got Independence Day with the same concept. It's not an...
You're using Independence Day to defend this?
Yeah, I love Independence Day. So you go, I want to hear Steve now. I want to hear Steve's.
Okay. The reason why is in my list, I was trying to go back and forth with a logic for putting together my list. The logic that I landed on.
That was your first problem. You can't use logic to defend yourself.
I know. But the logic that I landed on was when I initially saw these movies, how did I feel towards them? So when I rank these movies, I'm ranking them as if I'm coming out of the movie theater, okay, after seeing the movie, okay? So at the time when I'm ranking these movies, the other ones haven't happened yet. So how am I feeling towards this movie, and then how does that feeling rank in the six, okay? When this movie came out, I am ranking it number 3 because, and this will give away a little bit of my list. Number 1 was A New Hope, obviously, because coming out of that, there was nothing I'd ever seen like that before. Okay. My number 2 is actually Attack of the Clones, because after so long, after 30 years, you finally get to see Jedi action, okay? You get to see tons of Jedis fighting. You get to see Jedi intrigue and, and things going on in the entire universe. That's what I wanted to see. That's what I wanted Phantom
and
Menace.
And that's exactly why Phantom Menace is so low on my list, is right, because that's the movie that should have been the setup for everything with those characters, rather than going back to when he's a little precocious boy and you've got this creepy love thing going on where he's trying to set up that this little boy and this teenage girl are going to fall in love later on. Right. Well, that's okay. But
you don't see a spark at that time.
No, you see him trying to set it up though. And it just,
yeah, but there's maybe like a 6-year age difference between the two of them, because she's supposed to be a young queen and he's right. But so that happens.
But in the next movie, it's not creepy,
right? Right.
But in this one, you're just that's what's supposed to. Oh, that's Darth Vader's.
So Steve, you know, you have, which I think is interesting, two of your top. So you are actually in different view than both. We're all in different fields here.
Yeah.
Right. It's looking at the logic of my list. I mean, you guys have different logics for your list. So we can make fun of you, Jay. Okay. We can make fun of your list. But the thing is, you guys can make fun of my list too. And we can make fun of Ben's list because we're looking at it with different logics.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to fault you guys for either of your lists, even if I don't agree with them for whatever reason.
Well, I am faulting you guys.
That's okay. Well, I approach it which ones I think are actually the better movies as a whole. And for me, the first one, episode 1, I ranked it as 5. You know, it's one of the bottom ones. Right. But I still enjoyed it. I think the biggest arguments for it, and I'll take each of them on a little bit. One is Jar Jar Binks. 2 is Anakin. And the story is centered around him. And people get upset with the acting. Well, here's my argument for the acting. In the original Star Wars, the acting wasn't that strong. I mean, obviously, Sir Alec Guinness was obviously good. Carrie Fisher was very good. Han Solo, Harrison Ford, in the first movie, was not very strong. In fact, he was flat. And to be honest, and I mean, we would view it this way. It was the 70s, so it was a little bit different. But it did come off a little bit effeminate for a modern viewer. If you were to watch it for the first time, yes. He didn't have his bravado until the second movie. And Harrison Ford is one of my favorite actors of all time, and my guess is that was probably a 70s thing. But at the same time, this new film has tons of great actors, from Ewan McGregor, Natalie Portman, and one of my favorite actors out there currently, Qui-Gon Jinn. I mean, he was amazing.
Liam Neeson.
Yeah, Liam Neeson.
And that's a problem for me, is that you had these amazing actors, a much stronger cast than the original Star Wars movies. And here you have them not really shining.
Well, I disagree with you, and it's my turn now. You gave your little speech, so let me give you mine.
Tell me, I want to know. Yeah. How are they shining?
See,
how are they?
I think they're very – I love them as an overall cast. I will say this. Jar Jar Binks is annoying for me. However, I think that it's not necessarily the character that is annoying. I think the most annoying part of Jar Jar is his voice. So if it were me, you know, George Lucas has already kind of changed out characters. You know, he's taken the old Anakin out of the movies and put in the new Anakin at the end of Return of the Jedi. I think they should redo the voice of Jar Jar Binks. He'd be far less annoying, and I think with some technology, you can even change some of his animation to make it a little bit more palatable. But here's the thing. Here's my issue with people who pan it, is that George Lucas makes these films for kids.
Yes.
And Ben, my argument to you is that you saw the originals as a kid, and you were viewing these new movies as an adult. And here's the thing, is if you pull the younger audiences, statistically saying, they rate the higher films better than the older films. And it's because they saw them as kids. And Lucas is unapologetic that these are for kids and families.
Yeah. Well, let me wait. let me say this. My problem is not that it's for kids. I enjoy kids' entertainment, and I enjoy creating kids' entertainment. My problem isn't that it's for kids. My problem is that the storytelling is bad. This is a movie that's supposed to set up a friendship with Obi-Wan and Anakin, and they hardly have any screen time together.
Yeah.
This is a movie that's supposed to be about a kid who's learning or on the path to becoming a hero, and he accidentally gets into a ship, accidentally flies into space, and accidentally wins a battle. If I'm a kid and I'm looking at this as a kid, as far as I always looked at Luke Skywalker, he blew up the Death Star on purpose, and so that was heroic to me.
Yeah, but he was a teenager. He was like 18, 20 years old.
Okay, so still, let's put Anakin as a kid doing his kid thing. But instead of making it an accident, let him do it for real. He has shown that he can pilot and win the race for real.
But that's not really, you know, that's not actually an issue with storytelling. That's just a matter of convention. But here's the thing. It's something that hadn't been done before. And I guarantee you, if the little kid blows up the ship, people would be arguing, a little kid could never do that. That's ridiculous. So I think that no matter what you would have done, my issue is this, is that George Lucas's strength has never been telling an amazing story. I mean, from beginning to end, most people would argue that Empire Strikes Back is the best film overall. What George Lucas does is the imaginative, the unexpected, the grandiosity of it all. And I think Episode One does that well. Is it the best script you'll ever see? No, but that's not Star Wars. Other than what I would say is probably Empire. None of the Star Wars, you would sit there and say, this is a mastery example of a strong script. This was fun. It was entertaining. And it was, I think, on par with the franchise. I loved it.
I think it was fatally flawed just on a basic level because of there's so much potential and so much possibility. And the potential and possibility does get realized in some ways in later films and in even TV series. But this was just, to me, this was not the right place. And I'm not George Lucas, so I can't decide that because it's his thing. But it was just a very disappointing opening. And
you see, I watched this movie. This movie happened while I was on my honeymoon. I got married. This movie came out the Wednesday after I got married. So we took time off of our honeymoon to go and watch this movie, okay? And we were in line. We were one of the first people that – this was before midnight showings. And we got in there. It was early in the morning. They did an early morning showing. We showed up. There's a huge line. And we were one of the first people in, first people out. And to tell the truth, it was a little mystifying the first time because of the whole Jar Jar thing and the whole storyline – was sort of muddy to me and everything. So two more times on my honeymoon, we took time out to go and see the movie.
Wait. This has to be a joke, Steve. You're telling
no,
me
it is not.
You
it is
had
not.
Your honeymoon.
Three times. And one of the times was in Canada. One of the times was in Canada. We went to Nova Scotia. We were in Halifax. And I said, let's go see it one more time. And my wife, long-suffering as she is. Excuse me?
This is a scene from a movie. I can see. Honey, wait. Let's go back to the hotel. No, I want to go see Qui-Gon Jinn. I can see it now. Her looking into your eyes. Honey, you are the most beautiful eyes I've ever seen. You are the most loving husband ever. And you'd be like, honey,
yeah.
Darth Maul is actually a pretty decent villain.
Anyway, by the third time we watched it, okay, I was really getting my brain around it and really wondering why it was just not in my age range. I mean, was I that old, really? I was about 30 or whatever. And I'm like, what's the deal? And then there was tons of kids watching the movie because obviously their parents were bringing them because, I mean, same thing as why we have our kids watch it because it was part of our experience. We wanted to be part of their experience. And it was fresh to them. I mean, it was in the theater. It's not like you just watch them on DVD. And in the theater, I heard little kids. And when Jar Jar came on the screen, there was laughter. Kids laughed. Innocent kids laughter. And he stepped in the – he stepped in the poo and they laughed, and he got electric shock and they laughed. And a little girl, some couple of rows up, says, "I like Jar Jar."
Yep.
And I'm okay. Now I get it. Now I get it. I can have tons of problems with this movie looking at it as a 30-year-old, but I can't look at this movie as a 10-year-old and say it failed.
That was my experience too. I took my little brother. I'd taken my little brother who had never seen Star Wars, and I took him to, you know, when the Star Wars re-released and the original Star Wars re-released. And I took him to all of them, and I told him that this is like the greatest franchise ever. And so he had a built up expectation. When he saw that movie, he was laughing at Jar Jar the entire time. And so
my kids love Jar Jar.
Now, what actually gets me a little bit surprised, Steve, is that you have Attack of the Clones even higher.
Even higher, because when you look at the movie, at Phantom Menace, it's satisfying almost like as a prequel. You know, like if he had put this out as like a TV special and then had another movie, you would have been like, oh, that prequel was pretty cool because it warmed us up to the whole thing and you didn't have to explain all the backstory and bam, you got all this, you know, 2 hours of action. Yeah. And you didn't get that in Phantom Menace. So when I went to Attack of the Clones, it was as if he had set the whole thing up and now, bam, you were getting the 2 hours of action.
Yeah.
So that was the movie that I had been waiting for since 1983.
And where was that on your list?
Number two.
That was two for him. Well, Ben, I actually kind of like your idea. It's the first time I'd actually thought about it. You thought that Attack of the Clones should have been the first movie back into the new trilogy.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
I would have even done it a little bit, you know, younger. So you have, you know, they're not necessarily starting out where they've been training so long, but, you know, start them out where, you know, Obi-Wan and Anakin are getting to know each other and build the friendship, let them have some adventures together that tightens that bond. And then you come into Attack of the Clones or something similar to that, where you've got the bond is there. Because my problem was I didn't believe, and this is a storytelling thing, I didn't believe the bond of that friendship. Which is supposed to be this great friendship that gets this great betrayal. Because the greater the friendship, the greater the betrayal. But I put it at – I don't remember where it was on your list, but I put it tied at third
on my list. I have it as number four for me. You know what? But here's the thing, because – and I think this is the issue you have, is that you keep trying to make the story about him and Obi-Wan, Anakin and Obi-Wan. But that's not the story that Lucas is telling. He's telling the story of Anakin and Queen Amidala, Padme. He's telling the story of Anakin. The whole Star Wars series is all about Darth Vader. It's all about Darth Vader. So I think that is the issue that you're having, is that you're trying to make a movie something that it was never that he never was going to do. For me, I actually very much enjoyed Attack of the Clones. I had watched these before I did this list. I watched all the Star Wars straight through as we're doing them now, from 1, 2, 3, 4 all the way through. And I have to say, Attack of the Clones is I even like it better now than I saw it in the theaters. I love the battle between Obi-Wan and Jango Fett. I love the Jedi's going at it and then being in this Colosseum. I love the showdown that Count Dooku, he takes out Obi-Wan, he takes out Anakin, and then all of a sudden Yoda shows up. It's the first time you see Yoda go off, and it is awesome.
It was Yoda-licious.
I have heard people have problems with that. I don't. I love Yoda doing that, and all the stuff you've just said, those are the same reasons why. I mean, it's tied for third. If it wasn't for an emotional attachment to the other one that's with it at third, it probably would be third for me.
Yeah, yeah. I love that they – because, you know, this actually fulfilled 30 years or maybe a little bit less of people who wanted more of Boba Fett. And all of a sudden, actually get Jango Fett. You get to see the bounty hunter in action, and it was cool.
Yeah, and then he gets his head lopped off, and you're like, yeah!
But here's where you've got, again, that kid movie. You've got kid Boba Fett now.
Mm-hmm.
And I do struggle a little bit with this, in the whole, Jango Fett gets his head cut off, and then Boba Fett, as a child, picks up his head.
Now, wasn't that cool?
It doesn't look like he's picking up a head, because aren't heads going to be heavier than what he's... So maybe it's just the helmet, but...
Yeah.
But, man, I mean, I can understand the horrible scarring that Boba Fett now has, you know, going through, and that does inform his character. But showing it to my kids... It's just kind of like, wow, that's quite a moment there.
After seeing movie after movie of people getting their hands and arms cut off, to finally seeing someone get their head cut off, you're just like, finally.
But it was, you know? What I thought was cool was Mace Windu. I mean, Samuel L. Jackson, he just walks up there, and I thought it was a very entertaining film.
Yes,
my biggest issue with Attack of the Clones. And or it's possible it could have been a little bit higher, is that I didn't really care for a Hayden Christensen. Not that he's a bad actor, because he's done a lot of good things. So I don't know if it was him or if it was the direction. But he played spoiled and bratty and immature almost the entire time. So it's hard to root for him. You know, it's one thing to kind of plant seeds in the character that, you know, this guy has this stuff there. Just want to root for the guy. I actually liked him far more in Revenge of the Sith. I thought it was a far more well-rounded performance. But that was my biggest issue with the Attack of the Clones. But at the same time, I really enjoyed the film.
Yeah, and I've liked him in everything that I've seen him in. I've only seen him in a couple things other than this.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing, though, is this is kind of saying, well, Braddy turns to the dark side, you know? Yeah. Like, he's not turning evil. He's turning kind of bratty.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, the whole selfishness, maybe that is a part of evil. And we'll talk about good and evil, I'm sure, in the Star Wars universe later. But I think overall, are we all agreed? This is a pretty – there's not too many flaws to this movie. It's not the greatest, but it's not the worst.
It does the series justice. I think it's a very entertaining film. And
super fun.
I really did. My only issue with it was Hayden Christensen's character, but in Revenge of the Sith, which is the next movie, I liked his performance far better. And I guess a little segue there, because I actually have, that's the next movie we're supposed to talk about. And for me, Revenge of the Sith, as I know Steve and I have mentioned before, as we've talked outside of the podcast, the opening sequence of Revenge of the Sith is easily the best opening of all the films. And for me, the battle with Yoda versus the Emperor and Anakin versus Obi-Wan is epic. I mean, Ben, you talked about having the depth and the relationship between Obi-Wan and Anakin. Well, you get that in this film.
I didn't, though. I didn't feel like it was earned, is my problem.
I thought it was, because it was, you know, the whole depth. You were supposed to be the chosen one. He's helped him so much. Because I think you're trying to get a different relationship. And this is what I see. I see Obi-Wan seeing consistently that Anakin has issues and consistently trying to help him, and Anakin consistently turning down his help. I think you are wanting kind of more of a buddy comedy and kind of a redemptive. I think that
I want a betrayal is what I want. Yeah. I want a true personal betrayal that personally affects the people involved. And I don't feel like I got it. But that's not – I mean, that's a supposed
betrayal.
That's not actually my problem, even though.
Right, but
it's a supposed betrayal and a misunderstanding.
Do you have a family member or you know someone like this that no matter you see the potential, you see the connect, you see all the things that could be, and no matter how hard you try, they always find themselves in the same situation.
Yeah, I don't feel like that was earned either, though.
Oh, well, I
think a lot of it was said and not seen.
In the book, and I'm forgetting who wrote the book, but the last dialogue between Anakin and Obi-Wan is stretched out. It's deepened. It's widened, and it's really fantastic. R.A. Salvatore, I think, is the author of the book, and he did a really fantastic. If you want to read a book based on a movie. He did a fantastic job on that. But yeah, to tell the truth, I really was not getting the whole depth of that relationship. How can you be with someone that long and have the sensitivity to the force and have all this extra sensory perception type stuff going on and not be able to pick up the fact that, no, your wife isn't cheating on you? You know what I mean? it was sort of like, I don't know, it didn't ring true. It felt like in a normal movie with normal people, you could have that. You know, if it was When Harry Met Sally or something like that, where no one has superpowers and you could feel like this betrayal or misunderstanding and all this different stuff going on. But with people that deep, that sensitive to this otherworldly force, and you know, to have mental connections with these things and people and stuff, and be able to communicate outside of the body and things like that, and to have it devolve into just simply, you know, I think you and my wife have something going on. Well, we both deny it. Well, I still think it's going on. And I mean, well, not even appeal to the force. It's not like, you know, look inside and find it.
He's not being real thoughtful about anything. I mean, he's not. This is he's turned, basically.
But that's the thing is even Yoda, they're saying that the none of the Jedi thought that the dark side of the force, the Siths, could actually be around without them knowing it. And that's where the whole thing about Yoda saying there's a lot of pride in some of the Jedis, which probably is blocking them because they've been, I mean, lazy. If you haven't had a real test in thousands of years, then your skills aren't going to be as honed as they should be. Plus, I think you forget that in this film, a good portion of the time, they're not together. So Obi-Wan is busy doing other things, so he is not going to feel all of the turnings in Anakin because they're not together.
But the Force binds the universe together. You know,
they're not They're not psychic.
Sense of it. You have that sense of it. I mean, you know, run, Luke, run. You have all this, you know, use the Force, Luke. You have all this stuff where even past death, you have this communication.
But then it wouldn't be a fun movie if the Jedi be like, oh, in the front of episode one, Yoda goes, by the way, we know that this guy is actually a dark Sith. And so they just cut his head off at the beginning of the movie.
It would have to have been written better to make it more logical. And I think this goes into my reason why I pegged it as sixth last in the whole thing, is because this movie is where, for me, the logic of the whole series breaks down. Okay. And everything comes to a crashing halt because it's final. If this is the period, the end, no more movies from George Lucas. This is it. That's it. And this is encapsulated in these 12 hours. You get everything that George Lucas wants to say about this universe. And he says, you know, everything in the movies how did he put it? He said, everything in the movies is canon, and everything else is just rumor or whatever. What his exact words were, but this is it. And he had this logic in the movie based on this concept of the Force, based on this concept of balance. And by the time you get to the last movie, the sixth movie, or the third movie, whichever one, you know, Revenge of the Sith, and he puts the period and caps the entire thing off, the logic fails. And for me, the logic fails because technically, okay, you have Return of the Jedi is the last movie, and you have a concept of the Force, which is a concept of balance. You have the Jedi, which were on the good side, and the Sith, which were on the bad side. And his whole concept of the Force at the end of that last movie, the good side is outweighing the bad side. So you have this sense of balance, which in every single movie, it's just propounded into you that it's balance based on balance, and everything needs to go back to the balance. And then by the end of the movies, you have it out of balance.
Well, but you're talking about the prophecy logic. You're talking about the prophecy of.
Right.
Anakin being the chosen one. The chosen one is going to bring balance to the Force. See, I don't see episode 3 as the fulfillment of that prophecy. I see in Return of the Jedi when he does, because it what he does, Anakin does destroy the Emperor and he weeds out the last known Sith. And had he not gone over to the dark side, he wouldn't have been strong enough to take him out because nobody else could.
And he wouldn't nobody have been close enough to either.
He wouldn't have been close enough
But then the balance swings massively back into the favor of what we could be called good. And the Force is supposed to be an impersonal force that has no real predilection towards good or evil. It's supposed to be a yin and yang. It's supposed to be both things work together. And all of a sudden you have, by the end of the movie, good being upheld and badness being vilified. And if the Jedi were wanting to bring balance to the Force, then they would have to say to themselves at some point, okay, we're emphasizing the good way too much. You know, we have to do something to sort of feed it back in there. And people in a dualistic mindset, earthly people, normal people who have a religion that has a dualistic sense to it, they will look at negative things. And if they're really, truly in a dualistic mindset, they will take those negative things and say, this all is part of the great big ball of everything. We take the negative because there's a positive that goes along with it. And the Jedi don't do that. They put the good towards, they do everything that's towards good, good, good. And anything that's evil, anything that's Sith, they vilify. So the whole failed concept of the Force and the whole failed concept of the Jedi.
See, I like the Revenge of the Sith from this perspective. It's a story that they hasn't been told in the Star Wars, because most of Star Wars, the traditional Star Wars, is bad guy, good guy, big battle, and then you win the big battle, and then there's a big celebration. All right, they've done it multiple times. Now, Revenge of the Sith, though, is a different film. Revenge of the Sith is a tragedy. An ancient term for tragedy is you take royalty and the fall, and that is what this story is. This story is the fall of Anakin to Darth Vader. That is the story. The full fulfillment is, is his eventual redemption in Return of the Jedi, and the belief that Luke has that there's actually something in there. As far as the terminology of bringing balance to the Force, I think this comes down to George Lucas trying to sound, kind of really intellectual when it can be confusing. But again, from their perspective, if you were a Jedi, for them, bringing balance has to be good, because obviously they fight evil. So they're not trying to bring balance, like you're saying. The logic breaks down. So for me, the terminology of balance may be off, but it was never the intention of the Jedi's. Oh, well, we have a good Jedi council. We need to have a Sith council, too, to balance it out. That was never their intent.
The terminology breaks down.
Yeah, the terminology, but not the intent.
Because you've got good and evil, and it's very clearly delineated in the Star Wars universe. Good is good. Evil is evil. Good will win against evil, even though it doesn't seem like it because of Darth Vader, because Anakin became evil. But then again, we know the rest of the story.
Right.
Well, I think that's where George Lucas is he's giving a mixed message. Because in one point, he wants to make a heroic story, which most movies do. Okay, you want to have a hero, you want to have all that stuff. But at the same time, he's putting forth this concept of balance, of dualism, of one is just as good as the other, and then using that to tell a hero story, and it fails.
I think you're approaching it from a theological standpoint. This is Christianity, truth, and this is relativism. I don't think that George Lucas was trying to put down a theological mindset. And I think the terminology that he's using, bring balance, I don't think he's making that point, because if he did, he would have had a Sith council and he would have bringing balance in that way.
Which would have been awesome.
Yeah, it would have been awesome. That would have been cool. A Sith council. That would have been pretty sweet. But he obviously was setting up the film because good in the end wins. The story is a redemptive story. So
but
I think
why wouldn't he take something and redefine the Force within the context of the movies?
Because he didn't get the help for script writing like he did for Empire.
Well, yes, if you want to think a meta version of it. But I mean, in the whole context of the story, why wouldn't someone at some point have said, you know what we need to do here is to redefine the Force and have them find out something about the Force that says, you know, the Force does skew towards the good, and good is actually where the balance lies.
Well, that,
and if
they,
if he had done something like that, they didn't.
Well, they don't say it outright, but they do say it.
These things lead to the dark side. Anger and, you know, revenge or hate, these things lead to the dark side. They don't come out and say, by the way, there's good, there's bad, we're the good, we must overcome, because that would be really cheesy.
And it's implied. I mean, it's all implied.
Yeah, it's all implied.
But the thing is, you know, fear leads to anger leads to hate, hate leads to suffering. But then we read in, what is it, Corinthians? Where, you know, suffering brings forth eventually good. You know, we suffer, and we're eventually the fruit of that is, you know, we do that because the chain brings us to a point that's good.
No, don't go dualistic on us, Steve.
No, but you're taking it out of context. That's talking about for people who are Christians who go mm-hmm. through trials when they are persecuted. That's not – if someone's dying who don't know the Lord and they suffer in eternal damnation, that's not good. And I think that's what they're talking about. I think that fear is actually true. Fear, the Bible says the opposite of love is fear. Fear is the killer of love, and that is the fear, because you fear something you don't know. If there's, you know, racism starts that way, or of trying to control your life instead of trusting God starts that way, because you fear, you try to control things. So to me, fear really is the beginning of the dark side. But, you know, we've gone this long, but we've not even gotten out in the first set of movies.
Well, wait. I haven't even had a chance to even talk about this movie.
It's true. This is true.
Because I put Sith at number 6 or tied for number 5. And here is why.
How many ties did you get?
I know.
Just two. There's
like everything's
much,
tied at number 1.
two ties out of 6 movies.
There's too much story in this movie. This movie should have been 2 movies. And it's just because he started so slow with Phantom Menace, suddenly he has to cram everything into this movie. And that, it just, I understand you want a fast clip, but it's too much stuff. It's too rushed. I don't feel like they earn any of the dramatic moments that they try and portray. And it's just, and here's the other thing. We're talking about, you know, I don't want a buddy-buddy friendship. I want a mentor-mentee friendship. Or a mentor-mentee relationship. We don't get to see that. But here's where we do get to see it. In the Clone Wars. The cartoon series. You know, we've got, and that's why I don't think you can just say I'm an old fuddy-duddy. Because I can recognize in the Clone Wars TV series what was missing from the movie series. And I think it's there. And I think it's in a lot of ways done better, that relationship is.
Yeah.
But I have to say that, and this isn't straight from me, this is from, let's just call him Professor N, maybe misguided gentleman who has a couple of good ideas every once in a while. He made the point that the whole idea of the...
No. Professor Negatron. He's from a previous podcast that...
Oh, okay.
He was a supervillain who would review comics and movies and stuff, and
he made the very cogent point that the Clone Wars TV show is genius in his level. It's targeted towards children, and it's making Anakin and the clones as heroes. Now you have you can get Anakin's lightsaber and be the hero, and you can get the Clone War trooper helmet and be the hero and stuff. And these are the people who in the 6th movie commit genocide.
They're murderers. You have these. I mean, these are, you know, these are the main characters that the creators want the kids to identify with in this cartoon series. And these are the characters with the action figures. You know, Commander Cody, and they all have, I don't know all their names, but you know, they have these guys that have names, they have personalities, and these are the guys that kids are supposed to identify with. And they're the ones who, you know, they take Order 66, which, you know, is exterminate all the good guys, all the Jedi. And then you have Anakin, the other character that they want kids to identify with in the Clone Wars, and he's going to go off and kill children in Revenge of the Sith. And so, you know, but that was Professor Negatron. That was another thing. And, you know, maybe we could even share that if people wanted to hear it, we could share that with them. Professor Negatron's views on Star Wars. But the point was, we didn't get a really good mentor-mentee relationship between Anakin and Obi-Wan in the movies, which would have been nice because that would have made the betrayal that much sweeter. So that brings us to the original trilogy, and that is where we're going to stop our conversation for today. And we're going to continue actually talking today, but we're going to cut our conversation in half and post the original trilogy as its own episode, since this one, and we're basically coming up against the hour, and we've only gotten halfway through. So until next time, I'm Ben, signing off for the Sci-Fi Guys, and Godspeed.
You've been listening to the Strangers and Aliens podcast, hosted by Ben Avery, Dr. Jace O'Neill, and Steve McDonald. Our music was composed and mixed by Tim Leffel. We invite you to join the conversation by visiting our website, www.strangersandaliens.com, where you'll find show notes, articles, reviews, and more. You can also follow us on Twitter, where we are at Strange and Alien, or like us on our Facebook page. If you'd like to email us directly, our email is podcast@strangersandaliens.com. And once again, thanks for listening.
Insane. Like standing in front of a landing plane.